Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And it's time for another edition of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Eric Hansen from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka, the Fighting Irish football insider. For the South Bend Tribune, I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett, and we welcome you to the program brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. By Blackthorn Golf Club. And by Laban Insurance, the agency that rocks CY at LabanInsurance.com. It is 5:08 on this Thursday evening. Thank you for joining us on WSBT Radio. Don't forget the Blue Gold game is coming up Saturday at noon. Live play-by-play action on 96.1 WSBT. Sean Steyers, Eric Hansen, and I will have the call for you from Notre Dame Stadium. We are looking forward to that. So we will continue our spring football coverage today. Coming up in a couple of moments, Jeff Quinn, Fighting Irish offensive line coach, met the media today. It looks like the line is falling into place for 2018. We shall discuss. You'll hear from Khaled Kareem, the Irish defensive end, now in the starting lineup with Jay Hayes leaving the program for Oklahoma. You will hear from Kareem and Brian Kelly talking about the junior. Also at the bottom of this hour, it's the IndyInsider.com recruiting update. Tyler James has plenty to get to. We got to talk about the 2020 commitment a few days ago of quarterback Drew Pine. What about the 2019 quarterback group? Is anyone possibly starting to trend toward Notre Dame? Also, official visits this weekend, or actually last weekend. How did things go? Tyler will fill you in coming up at 5:30. My five question of the day, the five things Eric is looking for from the Notre Dame defense during Saturday's Blue Gold game. Next hour on the program, an hour from right now, you'll hear some comments from Irish offensive line coach Jeff Quinn. Also, we'll continue to follow the progress of the Cubs and the Cardinals at Wrigley Field. We've got rapid fire and then South Bend Cubs baseball coming up at 6:40. That's when the pregame gets underway, 7 o'clock first pitch, as South Bend wraps up their road trip in Dayton by taking on the Dragons tonight, back home to take on the Lansing Lugnuts tomorrow night at 7:35 from Four Winds Field. As we start the program, just a really quick update on what's happening at Wrigley Field. Chicago leads St. Louis 8-5. At one point, the Cubs led 8-1. St. Louis with a four-run seventh inning. To make things interesting, they're hitting in the eighth inning down by 3 runs, but all the damage occurred after Cubs starter John Lester was removed from the game after 96 pitches. You know, he gave up a lot of hard-hit balls, but they were caught. But still a great day when you look at the strikeouts. 6 innings, 2 hits, an unearned run, walked 1, and struck out 7. Eddie Butler was charged with the 4 runs that scored in the 7th inning. Meanwhile, Luke Weaver, a lot of pitches right over the heart of the plate, and the Cubs made him pay early on in this contest as Chicago today would score 2 in the first and 4 in the second against a guy you could say might be the ace of St. Louis staff, although Carlos Martinez probably is still that particular guy. Weaver's closing in, but not today. 4 innings, 9 hits, 6 runs allowed by Weaver, and the Cardinals batting in the eighth inning, trailing the Cubs by a score of 8-5. The Cubs looking to split this two-game series at Wrigley Field. White Sox are idle today. All right, let's bring in Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune with the Blue Gold game just 2 days away. We've got to get you more information about this Fighting Irish football team as they prepare for that game to wrap up the spring on Saturday. A lot of teams did not have their spring games this year due to the weather. Notre Dame will have one Saturday at 12:30. Again, the game right here on WSBT Radio. And Eric, Jeff Quinn met the media earlier today, the Fighting Irish offensive line coach in his first season taking over for Harry Heaston. Now, Coach Quinn has been a part of the program, kind of in the background for the last couple of years, but now front and center as the offensive line coach at the University of Notre Dame. First, let's just establish this. You've heard from a couple of the coaches for Notre Dame, including head coach Brian Kelly, that Liam Eichenberg is going to start at left tackle. We're assuming Alex Bars might move over to left guard. Then you've got Kramer at right guard and Hansey at right tackle. Was Quinn agreeing with everything we've heard so far from the offensive coordinator and the head coach?
Yes, he did not veto his bosses today. So
sometimes you never know.
Yeah, you never do know. You know, it made it sound also that those moves were permanent, you know, that there wasn't going to be, okay, well, let's take one more look at this. I believe that the Bars move is going to stick, that he'll stay at left guard and the other moves as well. So you look at that, and there's some bold moves there. You're moving arguably your best lineman to a new position. You're converting a guy that started at tackle for you last year into a guard, and you're putting your least experience of the five at your most critical position, mm-hmm. left tackle. So, and I would agree with all those moves, but you know, those are bold moves. You know, sometimes somebody that's following Harry Heaston may not have the confidence to make those. Jeff Quinn did.
So, Eric, as we start to leave spring and think toward the fall, are there many questions left to be answered for Jeff Quinn?
In terms of, like, personnel decisions, short term, I don't think there are. I think that, you know, people were asking him today, are you open to a rotation like Notre Dame had last year at right tackle with Tommy Kramer and Robert Hansey sharing that position? He goes, you know, I've done that before in my career, and there have been years that I've just gone with my five. You know, he said at each situation, you kind of have to take it as it comes. But he said, I feel really good that we have nine, you know, players that could play winning football for us. And in addition to some of the names that we've heard before, Josh Lugg and Trevor Ruland and who am I forgetting there? Josh Lugg, Trevor Ruland and Aaron Banks, you would have Dylan Gibbons attached to that. And then mm-hmm. I think more long-term, you know, he was going on and on about what a kind of a dream center Sam Mustipher is to have, just in terms of his athletic ability combined with his extreme knowledge of coverages and protections and being able to diagnose defenses. And he volunteered, too, that Luke Jones of the incoming freshman is probably the guy they're going to groom next to be the next Sam Mustipher. I mean, they certainly have some people in between. Dylan Gibbons has taken some snaps. Trevor Ruland might be a one-year starter there next year. Mm-hmm. But long-term, Luke Jones is the guy they've kind of identified that they like to take a look at there.
Just hearing from Coach Quinn today, Eric, did anything catch your ear in particular?
Well, a couple things that I asked him about in particular because it caught my eye last Saturday. You know, all four of the freshman offensive linemen were at last Saturday's practice on their own dime. And it's not like, you know, John Dirksen drove over from Ohio, okay. But Cole Mabry came from Tennessee, Luke Jones from Arkansas, Jarrett Patterson from California. And this is the kind of stuff that happened during the Heaston regime. Part of the culture that I talked about that's so important that Jeff Quinn continues and he wants to continue. So that those guys with very little encouragement came up, you know, and put that together and said, okay, let's all come this weekend. We're going to watch a practice. We're going to go and meet with Matt Bayless and figure out what the strength and conditioning demands are going to be like. And then we're going to go hang with the guys off the football field because that chemistry is very important with that offensive line group. So I thought that was really impressive. And then also the fact that Mike McGlinchey was there again, Aaron Taylor was there.
Wow.
And so you have the guys from the past, the greats from the past coming back and imparting their wisdom. And that's something that happened a lot during the East End. Now, this is very early, but these are very good early signs. And I thought that was my biggest takeaway. And Jeff Quinn, you know, when I said, you know, talked to him about the players from the past, and he goes, boy, that just made the hair on my back stand up. So he's a very enthusiastic guy. I mean, I described him in an article I'm writing for tomorrow as more caffeinated, more G-rated, more slogan slinging than he stand. But there are a lot of similarities between the two.
A slogan slinger, huh?
Yeah, he's got a lot of catchphrases, you know. Whereas Harry's catchphrase was something that we can't say on the air.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There aren't too many offensive line coaches that are more G-rated.
Yes.
They seem to be the ones that get more excited than anybody else.
Yeah, well, he was very excited. I mean, he volunteered that he's excited just when he wakes up in the morning for no particular reason. Then he realizes he's the offensive line coach at Notre Dame, and so then there's no need for coffee.
Eric, as we start moving our thoughts toward the Blue Goal game on Saturday, are you expecting ones versus ones and twos versus twos when the offenses and defenses take the field?
You know, our Stableford directions did not say that, but that seems to make the most sense. I think we might see ones against twos at one point, but Brian Kelly is a ones versus one kind of coach, and I would be surprised if we didn't get a lot of those looks. And I think that assistant coaches would be disappointed if we didn't get those looks, because I think that Jeff Quinn wants to see what Liam Eichenberg does against Dalen sure. Hayes and against Julian Okora. And, you know, going against Adio Gundeji isn't quite the same thing. And so what are you really getting out of that spring game if you go ones versus twos, especially when it's in this offense versus defense format? It seems to make most sense if you match up these units and maybe mix and match some personnel a little bit to get looks. But I mean, what's even the point if you're not going to do ones versus ones?
Agree with you there. Looking forward to that on Saturday at 12:30, the Blue Goal game here on WSBT Radio. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat tonight, brought to you by Budweiser, Goshen Health System, Blackthorn Golf Club, and Laven Insurance here on WSBT Radio. Khalid Kareem, Irish junior defensive end, Eric, 6'4", 270, moving into a starting role. Last year's starting defensive end, Jay Hayes, wrapping up school this spring. He will graduate from Notre Dame and then will become a graduate transfer. He has decided to play one more season of college football in Norman with the Oklahoma Sooners. So, Kareem last year, 21 tackles from a backup spot, 5.5 tackles for loss. He recorded 3 sacks and also had a fumble recovery. Well, here's Brian Kelly recently talking about if Kareem is ready for this big opportunity.
Yeah, we do. We felt like he had earned the starting position there. You know, based upon his work, both in the weight room and on the football field, you know, he was going to be the starter at that position. So, yeah, we believe that based upon his production.
And once again, here's Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly discussing in particular what he likes about the skill set of Kareem.
You know, I think for him, it's workload. He's got a real good length. He has a knack for pass rushing, just has a knack of being there and getting to the quarterback. I think for him, the next step becomes, how do we get him up to 60 plays? You know, he was a 20-play guy for us. How do we get him up to 60? So fatigue, strength, all those things coming together. But he's got some really innate ability to find the quarterback.
So, Eric, I think we're both in agreement that you really hate to lose a veteran player. It takes away from depth at a position. And Jay Hayes played really well for the Fighting Irish last year. But now as we take a look at that position, do you think it is overly weakened? At the very least, can Kareem match or go beyond what Jay Hayes might have done as a starter for this football team? So I'll kind of package two questions into one.
Well, I mean, they're, even though they play the position, they're a little bit different in what they bring to the table, Darren. And some of that is size and some of it's explosive. Jay was a bigger player, and I think that he stands up to the run a little bit better than Khalid. Khalid is a more explosive player, and he's a guy that's going to make more negative plays, meaning plays behind the line of scrimmage, and fumble, force fumbles and fumble recoveries and things of that nature. He's just that kind of guy. But what I think it does, Darren, is it takes you one injury away from kind of an icky situation at that side. I mean, you certainly could move Dalen Hayes over there and go with Julian Okorah and Jameer Jones on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an ideal situation. I really think, you know, Notre Dame has to get down from 89 to 85 scholarships, but I still think Jay Hayes wasn't the one that you wanted walking out the door.
Right.
And again, he gave you some position flexibility in that he, if you got thinned out at defensive tackle, you could move him there too. So, but I like Khalid Kareem a lot. I think he was going to contribute a lot. I think he was going to play more than 20 snaps a game this year, and I like where that position is headed, but it would have been nice to have Jay Hayes around for another year.
Finally, here is Kareem answering a few questions from the media recently over at the University of Notre Dame.
Yeah, he's Dalen. He's, you know, he played linebacker in high school. He's more comfortable dropping back, you know, covering receivers, running backs out the backfield. You know, I'm just good, you know, being my three-point stance.
Yeah, is that the position that's, it just feels more natural, I guess, to you for what you bring to it?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are we mispronouncing your name when we call you Khalid?
Yeah.
It's Khalid.
Yeah. Khalid. Yeah.
I got that lesson, too.
Khalid, you mentioned you had been playing defensive end since you were six. I mean, did you play any other positions? Did you play some offense?
I was the third straight backup quarterback, and I played tight end for like 1 year, but majority of the time.
How old were you when you were the quarterback?
I was six. My first year, they thought I could throw. Then I slowly moved down the depth chart. I kind of gave it up.
When you mentioned your dad being an influence, what does he kind of bring to the table in terms of helping you evolve?
Well, just being a coach, so, you know, he's giving me extra tips, going home, watching film, after practice every game, so that definitely helped.
And how was that relationship? I mean, are you comfortable with him, the coach dad separation with that?
Yeah, we over time, I definitely, in the beginning, kind of still more of a dad figure, but then, you know, more separate coach and dad, so coaching me on the field, and when we get off, dad mode, but when we get home, watch the field, it's back to coach, so it's just a balance.
And I saw that you took some reps inside today. Mm-hmm. What's your comfort level with that?
You know, I'm comfortable with just, you know, I get more confidence every time I take more reps, so yeah.
When you think about the opportunity now that's facing you with a little bit more room to maneuver there, what goes through your head?
That's just more opportunities for me to make more plays.
Your position, is it important to, I guess, sort of have a chemistry with the tackle that's next to you, or is it more about just knowing your role within that 11, I guess, or is knowing the guy next to you and sort of his tendencies and his strengths? Is that important at this position, I guess, or not as much?
That's definitely important to have a connection with your linebacker, the guys behind you, and your safeties. And it's important to have a connection with everyone, really.
How do you feel like that's going for you, I guess? So where do you still, like, feel like there's areas you want to take steps on?
Always, you know, want to take steps for, you know, better communication on the field. But I feel like we're really, you know, starting to ascend right now.
Some of the comments of Kareem, and Eric, you asked about, he was playing inside at one of the practices. Do you see him in a package where he might do that, or was that just the coaching staff just trying something to see what he might be able to do?
That was in a package. That was in nickel and I believe in dime as well. They put Dalen Hayes and Okorah on the field together. They normally play the same position, rush end. They put those guys on the field together, put Khalid Kareem inside with Jerry Tillery, and kind of give you a faster look from your pass rushers.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, SportsBeat, Aaron WSBT Radio. We have more Notre Dame football talk coming up. We've got Tyler James joining us for his Thursday 5:30 conversation on Notre Dame football recruiting and our IndyInsider.com recruiting update. And then Eric will offer some thoughts on the Notre Dame defense, what he is looking from that unit in Saturday's Blue Gold game. That's all before the top of the hour on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT, with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Well, Tyler's back for more on Fighting Irish football recruiting. He joins us for our IndyInsider.com recruiting update from 96.1 WSBT. Eric Hansen back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Dayton, Ohio. We say hello to Tyler James. Hello, Tyler.
How we doing, Darren?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Great.
Good to be with you as always, and you got a lot of things to talk about. My goodness, let's start with some news from earlier this week. Quarterback Drew Pine is verbally committed to the Fighting Irish. He is now a member of the class of 2020 for Notre Dame. As you've been able to gather some information about Pine, I mean, he's unofficial visits at Alabama and Florida State, so that says something, but what type of prospect do you believe he is?
Yeah, a very interesting recruit. I've knew of him for a while. Obviously, he's been a Notre Dame target for some time, but getting to know him a little bit more since he committed. 6'1", 175-pound sophomore who's already 17 years old out of New Canaan, Connecticut. He threw for 2,355 yards and 25 touchdowns with 11 interceptions, with completing nearly 60% of his passes. He seems pretty advanced for his age, I would say, and has really drawn a lot of interest. He was receiving scholarship offers as early as an eighth grader, so he's been through a lot, even though he's only a sophomore. So I think he's used to the attention, really saw himself at Notre Dame, and seems to be a good match. I think he said he looks up to Brady Quinn. That was one of his idols as a young kid. So Notre Dame certainly played that up, and getting a chance to play for Tommy Reese, someone who played quarterback at Notre Dame, he found really attractive. So Notre Dame was able to get an early commitment from him. He's first commitment in the 2020 class, and I think anytime you get a quarterback early in a class, that is helpful because those guys are usually pretty outgoing and willing to help recruit. So we'll be interesting to see how he kind of embraces that role and where Notre Dame goes from here in the 2020 class.
Okay, Tyler, Cade McNamara obviously decommitted and then flipped over to Michigan. He was a 2019 quarterback recruit. And I know that this might be an exclusive opinion here, but do you think that Notre Dame is going to end up with a 2019 quarterback?
I think they will. I'm not sure who it will be, but I think they certainly need to. I think it would be too risky, in my opinion, to try and skip a recruiting class, even though you like Phil Dracovic a lot in the 2018 class and certainly like Drew Pine in the 2020 class. But it's a long way before Drew Pine can actually sign with Notre Dame, so there's no guarantees when it comes to that. But you also don't want necessarily that hole in your depth chart. And Notre Dame actually offered another 2019 quarterback Wednesday night in Graham Mertz, a kid that's been committed to Wisconsin for quite some time, but has been on Notre Dame's radar. We visited last summer, and we'll see if Notre Dame can get him back on campus. They really need to expand the board there in the 2019 class because pretty much all the guys that they have offered are committed elsewhere. Max Duggan is the most recent offer before Graham, and he recently committed to TCU. So I think they're certainly being patient, and I don't know if they're going to take it. A scrub, a guy that they feel like they have to have a quarterback, even if they feel like he won't ever play at Notre Dame. But they're going to have to work hard to be able to identify who that quarterback could be, because I do think that they need a quarterback in the 2019 class.
Talking Fighting Irish football recruiting with Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. Let's talk about Notre Dame's first official visit weekend. How did it go, first off? And would you say there are any recruits coming out of that visit that could be lining up for a commitment down the line?
Yeah, everything I've heard, it went well. I certainly, they could have hoped for better April weather. I think all of us would like better April weather around yeah. here, but they didn't get much help on that side of things. But I think having the commits, Jacob Lacy and Hunter Spears in the camp, has really helped them quite a bit there. I think that Notre Dame is in good shape with guys like Nana Osafa-Mensah, though it certainly won't be easy to beat out Texas. He's looking at a May decision, so Notre Dame's going to have to hope they can hold on to their good position with him and try to beat out Texas. Osita Ekwenu, I don't know if he has any plans on making a decision anytime soon, but Notre Dame feels pretty good there. And also Nick Henrich, a linebacker who was actually on an unofficial visit. I've heard good things about the way his visit went. So I think that those are kind of guys to keep an eye on moving forward. Certainly Notre Dame would like to start maybe getting some more commitments in the 2019 class, but we've seen that a lot of guys are kind of taking their time and taking advantage of these early official visits and maybe holding off to commit based on when they can take those visits.
Okay, Tyler, we tweet out when Notre Dame gets a commitment. We also tweet out when Notre Dame doesn't get a commitment from somebody that they're looking at.
Sure.
Who are some of the guys that they've maybe missed on that of significance recently?
Yeah, there's a pair of running backs, Ches Malusi out of Florida and Steel Chambers out of Georgia. Two running backs, obviously, Autry Denson's recruiting in two areas in Notre Dame, or Autry Denson recruits for Notre Dame, Florida and Georgia. From my understanding, Notre Dame had felt like they were in a good spot with those guys, and it's not really great news that those guys went elsewhere. Ches Malusi committed to Clemson, Steel Chambers committed to Ohio State. The only other running back target that has visited Notre Dame that isn't committed somewhere else is Kenny McIntosh, the younger brother of Deion McIntosh, and kind of hard to imagine that he would end up here after his brother was kicked off the team. So I think Austin Denson has a lot of work to do with recruiting running backs, even though Notre Dame did sign two in the 2018 class. I think he's going to have to try and get some of these guys on campus, maybe extend some more offers. They do have a handful of offers out, but like I mentioned, the guys that have visited have committed elsewhere, and Ohio State's got two of those guys in Steel Chambers and Samson James. And then another guy that Notre Dame appears to be out for is defensive back target Kenyatta Watson. He appears to be bound for Texas. He's going to announce his decision on May 1st, but he had been planning to officially visit Notre Dame in May, so that won't happen. He did visit early in the year, but didn't make another unofficial visit that he had planned on making due to some travel issues. I don't know that Notre Dame's going to lose a lot of sleep over that one. I think losing out on Ches Malusi and Steel Chambers is probably a bigger deal than losing out on Kenyatta Watson. I think at Notre Dame he probably would have ended up at safety, and Notre Dame seems to actually be in a good spot at safety, which is kind of weird to say. But Litchfield Adjavan is a safety recruit that Notre Dame feels good with, and obviously getting three safeties in the previous class with Paul Mawala, Derek Allen, and Houston Griffith, they should be in a spot where they don't need to load up at safety in this recruiting class. It would have been nice to get into Grayson High School in Georgia, which is where Kenyatta Watson goes to school. They have a lot of talented players there. He's actually going to be announcing with three of his teammates on May 1st. That's how many talented players they have at that program. But it doesn't appear that the Irish are going to win out on that recruitment, and we'll have to look elsewhere for some other safety targets.
Good analysis right there on the running back position. And Tyler, yesterday in Eric's exclusive IndieInsider.com chat, he had one of his chat individuals ask about running back recruitment and the inability to recruit five-star running backs. I know Eric talked about guys like James Aldridge and Greg Bryant were five stars, did not impact the Notre Dame program like everybody expected. And I guess there's another website that had a story that maybe the Autry Denson has to be better recruiting running backs. I don't know if you read the article or if you know much about it. Just a general thought on the way the Irish have handled recruiting and the way they've ran the ball the last couple of years. They must be doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the criticism is fair. I think you would like to be able to see Notre Dame go out and get some big-time running backs after a season where they just won the best offensive line, won the Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in the country. If you're going to have success with your offensive line, you'd like to be able to have success with running back recruiting. But certainly, I think when it comes to running backs, you can be productive and be good running backs without being a five-star recruit. So I don't know that Notre Dame has to be worried about not signing a five-star running back, but I think you would like to have guys in the four-star range, and maybe certainly the guys that got in the last class, Jameer Smith and Sebo Flemister, those guys weren't four-star recruits either. So if you can develop them, I think it's fine, but I think it is fair to ask more and see what Notre Dame can do to maybe improve the recruiting efforts there. I think Autry Denson is a good recruiter. I think he relates to kids pretty well, and that hasn't necessarily translated in the last couple of classes. So we'll definitely be monitoring that, but I don't think that this means that Autry Denson can't recruit. I think he still has the ability to talk to guys and explain why Notre Dame would be a fit for them.
Eric, let me just jump in and ask a follow-up. And
sure.
Eric, if you want to jump in on this answer, too, after Tyler, please feel free. Even though they put up the huge rushing numbers last year, and even though the offensive line won the Joe Moore Award, do you think it might be some of these running backs look at Notre Dame as a passing program despite what they've done the last couple of years? Is there a perception that Brian Kelly loves to throw the football? Does that have anything to do with it, just throwing out that idea?
I don't think so. I would be surprised if recruits had formed those kind of opinions about Notre Dame's offense.
Okay.
Usually, and if they do have opinions, it's usually from the previous season and not much farther back than that. They're not necessarily long-term Notre Dame football followers. I mean, there could be people in their corners that are saying, hey, that's not a good choice for you. They don't run the ball enough there. But I don't know that would necessarily be coming from the recruits themselves. I think they have more of an open mind when it comes to those kinds of things.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, though, Darren, if they read message boards, they may think that, because there's a lot of fans that, you know, oh, my God, Brian Kelly's this pass-happy, crazy, you know, newfangled offense kind of guy. And certainly last year proved otherwise. They were
the
top 10 in the country.
Say, Eric, go ahead. I'm sorry. It's your turn.
Okay. There's some commitments coming up tomorrow. There's a potential commitment for Notre Dame. Tyler, who is it, and what do you think Notre Dame's chances are? Who else is involved?
Yeah, offensive lineman John Olmstead is making his announcement tomorrow afternoon. I think at this point that Jeff Quinn will be smiling soon after 3 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. John Olmstead is picking from either Notre Dame, Michigan, Rutgers, Ole Miss, and Minnesota. I think that Notre Dame's in a good spot here. He's the number 10 offensive tackle, according to Rivals, in the 2019 class. Number 32, according to 24/7 Sports, a four-star recruit out of New Jersey, 6'6", 290 pounds. So I think you could make the argument, if he does commit to Notre Dame, that he may be a better than all the offensive linemen Notre Dame signed in the 2018 class. So this would be an important get for Notre Dame and Jeff Quinn as he tries to establish himself as a recruiter here at Notre Dame. Certainly has things going in his favor with the offensive line he inherited and the reputation that Notre Dame has built up with offensive linemen. So we'll see if that is good news, like I feel it may be.
Tyler, Blue Gold game on Saturday. Is it a big recruiting day?
Yeah, there'll be a lot of guys. There's not a huge list of offer guys right now. There's it's right now six guys in the 2019 and 2020 classes that Notre Dame has offered. 2019 class wide receiver Kendall Abdur-Rahman out of Edwardsville, Illinois, a three-star athlete. Quinn Carroll out of Minnesota, an offensive lineman who's been to Notre Dame a couple times already. And defensive end Howard Cross, a recent Notre Dame offer. And then the 2020 class, Cole Brevard out of Carmel, Indiana, is a defensive tackle. AJ Henning out of Illinois, a running back, and defensive end Darian Henry out of Ohio. So those guys all have Notre Dame offers. There'll also be a number of 2018 signees on campus, including guys like Derek Allen, Phil Dracovic, Shane Simon, Braden Lindsey. So there'll be a little reunion there, get a glimpse of the future there. And then there'll also be a number of guys in the 2019 and 2020 classes that don't have offers yet that we'll see maybe somewhere down the road Notre Dame decides to offer. But a long list, but not necessarily a giant recruiting weekend. I think they've more spread out the recruiting weekends throughout the spring rather than trying to focus it all on the blue-gold game.
I made the noise when you said Edwardsville because that's where Darren is from.
Yeah, he went to school. Give me the scouting report.
Went to school.
Yeah, that's a good program. Edwardsville has a good program there. Yep. All right, Tyler, what do you have coming up on the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com?
Yeah, so actually in tomorrow's paper, for any women's basketball fans, I have another story on the number one recruit in the 2019 class who committed to Notre Dame earlier this week. Some interesting comments from her. And then in Saturday's paper will be a full preview of all the visitors coming to town. And we'll see potentially also if there's a commitment. Mike Burrell will be covering that story if John Olmstead decides to commit to Notre Dame tomorrow.
He's Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune. Read him in the Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Great job as always, Tyler. Thank you so much, and we'll see you Saturday.
All right, see you guys.
Tyler James with the latest in Fighting Irish football recruiting. Great stuff as always. It is 14 minutes in front of 6 o'clock. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser, Goshen Health System, Blackthorn Golf Club, and Laven Insurance. Coming up next, we'll have our My 5 question of the day. We'll focus on the Fighting Irish defense and what is Eric looking from that unit during Saturday's Blue Goal game. That's coming up from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My 5 question of the day, which will be answered by Eric Hansen. The five things that Eric is looking for from the Notre Dame defense during Saturday's Blue Goal game. We start with answer number 5.
I'm going to say Darnell Yule. He's not a guy that has factored into spring ball a lot, but sometimes in a spring game like this, a guy like that gets in a competitive situation and you see something. I'm just curious to see where his skill set is in a competitive game, and I think he'll get a chance to play, and hopefully it'll be against really good linemen so we can see what he can do.
The Grant Blankenship of 2018?
Okay, I'll go with that.
Number 4.
Number 4 is the Rover options. I want to see, Shane Simon is going to be there, but he's not going to be in uniform. He's the guy that may end up starting there, a true freshman who arrives in June. But I want to see Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah in particular. He's a redshirt freshman. I want to see where Asmar Bilal is. You know, I think right now they would mix and match those two if Shane Simon didn't exist and wasn't going to challenge. But Jeremiah could kind of push the other options out of the way. So I want to see him because I know Brian Kelly is very high on his traits.
We're going through the five things Eric is looking for from the Notre Dame defense during Saturday's Blue Goal game. Here's answer number 3.
The backup linebackers, and why that's important for me is I think that's one of the positions Notre Dame can't afford to lose a starter, either Drew Tranquil or Tavon Coney. I want to see what the gap is between there. You got Jonathan Jones, who's been on campus and playing there for a while. You have Jordan Jenmar Keith, a sophomore to be, who's been playing the position about a week. So I want to see what those guys can do. And I also want to look at the freshmen, because no matter what happens, Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil aren't going to be next year. And I want to see how strong this position may be headed for the future.
Number 2.
Pass rush. Notre Dame has got to improve its pass rush. They ended up 83rd in the country last year. They faded in November. They definitely seem like they have the pieces and the scheme to improve that greatly. And Saturday's rules kind of skew that, where it's hard to tell really if it's that improved. But I think you can read between the lines and get something out of that.
All right, so the five things Eric is looking for from the Notre Dame defense during the Blue Goal game. Number 5, Darnell Yule. Number 4, Rover options. Number 3, take a look at the backup linebackers. Number 2, we need more pass rush. And number 1 is
what number 1 was going into spring, which is the safety play. Now, that's looked a lot better in practice. I want to see it in a game situation and see how different this defense might look come September, if that safety play is at least solid.
That is today's My 5 question of the day from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, I'll have an offensive line analysis starring Jeff Quinn, the new offensive line coach, with a little bit of information about the Blue Goal game. As Tyler mentioned, he'll have a follow-up on number one recruit Samantha Brunel. She has some interesting comments about Connecticut. Tom Noy has a column on Bart Curtis. We've got a note on the Alabama-Notre Dame football series. They announced the dates 2028 and 2029. And, of course, Cole Kmet's going to get his first collegiate baseball start tomorrow against Virginia Tech on the mound. And much, much more.
I didn't realize Kmet was going to go into the rotation. Interesting news there after all those saves so far this year. Couple of other notes outside our area. Former Chicago Bear wide receiver Brandon Marshall has been released by the New York Giants after failing a physical, played just one season with the Giants, five games held back due to injury, had 18 catches. And Brian Price was let go today as manager of the Cincinnati Reds. The Reds are 3-15. They are 29th at ERA, 29th in runs scored. And you take a look at that roster, it's hard to blame the manager for the lack of quality drafting and development and signing free agents and making good trades by getting rid of top-level players. It has been pretty much a disaster the last couple of years, Eric, for Cincinnati. And I know they're just making a change to make a change, but this was not on Brian Price.
Yeah, if they were going to make that change, wouldn't you thought they wouldn't have brought him back this year? What did they expect coming out of the gate this year, I guess?
They got an option. Nick Senzel, who's ready to play on the infield, still at AAA, and no one understands why he's not there. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Tower, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Styers.
6:06 at WSBT. Thanks for sticking around. Another edition of Sports Beat here on WSBT Radio. And we are brought to you by Laban Insurance. Also today by Goshen Health System, Blackthorn Golf Club, and Budweiser. Sean Styers back at our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Dayton, Ohio. Sports Beat is done at 6:40 for South Bend Cubs pregame, and then the first pitch comes your way at 7 o'clock. South Bend will look to avoid a three-game sweep at the hands of the Reds affiliate here tonight. Eric Ullman, a right-hander, will get the start for South Bend. And the top offensive player for South Bend so far this year, Jared Young, was placed on the disabled list today. And you take a look at all the categories he is leading this team, Sean. This tells you what he means to the team. He leads the squad in average, on-base percentage, home runs, hits, total bases, slugging percentage, extra base hits, and OPS.
Wow.
So that's a pretty good bat out of the South Bend Cubs lineup for at least the next 7 days. But no excuse. You got to go get them tonight. They'll play with a 24-man roster tonight and see if they can figure out a way to beat Dayton, who has won 7 consecutive games. And I'll just say I built up a really good pitching matchup last night. Jose Albertos, the number 3 player in the Cubs system, according to Baseball America. Hunter Green, the number 2 overall pick of the draft last summer out of California, taken by the Cincinnati Reds. It really didn't, unfortunately, unfold. We had a 93-minute rain delay in the third inning, so that kind of halted Green's night. I mean, he threw close to 100, but the four-seamer's pretty straight, and we actually hit the ball pretty hard off of him throughout his outing. Alberto struggled for his second straight start with South Bend, and didn't turn out to be what we expected, but I'll tell you what, Dayton's bullpen was really good last night, and they held South Bend to one run, a 4-1 win by Dayton. So I kind of built up this great pitching matchup. Green didn't give up a run, but just didn't turn out to be the type of outing for both that I was kind of hoping for.
It's usually the way it works, isn't it? You think one thing's going to happen, yeah. You're anticipating this great thing, and then it's like, what happened?
Yeah, I mean, we've heard a lot of great things about Alberto. He has not been on his game as of yet. So I'm sure as we move along, he's someone from Mexico, not used to cold weather. I'm guessing that has something to do with it. We see it with position players from warm weather climates playing in cold weather for the first time. They have trouble grabbing the baseball, a lot of throwing errors. Gleyber Torres made a ton of errors in April in 2015. It warmed up, the errors went away. So I think you have to hold judgment until the weather does warm up because, again, a lot of these guys have never played in this, let alone just try to walk down the street. So it is a different environment, say the least. Yeah.
We could wear a windbreaker, and those guys need three stocking caps and the fleece parka and the whole thing.
Well, it's not a lot of fun being in this for the first time.
No, not at all.
Well, Irish offensive line coach Jeff Quinn met the media today. Sean, you over there gathering in his comments. We've got a Brian Kelly comment to get to as well here as we get this 6 o'clock hour rolling on WSBT Radio. First, let me just ask you in general. I mean, it kind of sounds like that Quinn validated everything Chip Long and Brian Kelly has said, that Eichenberg and Bars and Mustafa, Kramer and Hainsey is going to be the starting lineup.
Right.
Anything else besides that kind of catch your ear today, listening to Quinn meet the media and talk about this new-look Fighting Irish offensive line?
I don't know if anything jumped out, but, I mean, the thing that stood out is this is an offensive line coach, that's for sure. I wasn't really sure what we were going to get, but I mean, he's fairly no nonsense, it seems like, which is kind of along the Harry Hiestand lines. But, you know, he just talked about kind of keeping the same standards going. And that was the big thing that everyone wanted to see when you lose a guy like Harry Hiestand, that you're going to keep those same standards up there. And I guess the other thing, and we'll kind of hear some about this in a minute, they've kind of moved a lot of different guys around to different spots on the line, and they've also got a lot of different guys in there. And so he was asked about, are you going to play more than five guys at some point this year? And they've got some guys who maybe can crack the rotation. They obviously, at right tackle, rotated that quite a bit. That was the spot last year, and that worked out for him. We'll see how that goes this year, but at the very least, there are some guys kind of right behind that first five who are pushing for some position. Guys like Trevor Rulon, Josh Lugg, Aaron Banks, Dylan Gibbons, those are some of the guys that he mentioned, so it's going to be interesting to see it. When we really get a chance to really see it live this Saturday, and again, it's a spring game, so you do have to take everything with a grain of salt, but at the same time, I am interested to see at least how this first five comes together and how they look out there in a live setting.
Well, if they are going to run the ball like we expect, it's going to be a Tommy Kramer type day. Reason why he's moving inside to be that physical beast to get that running game rolling. All right, we'll hear from Quinn in a second. But before we talk about next year, NFL draft, of course, coming up next week. Quentin Nelson, more than likely a top 10 overall pick. And Brian Kelly today was asked about, what is the upside for an NFL team that drafts Quentin Nelson high in round number one?
You know, again, I think this is, you know, sometimes hard to say, but he brings and I know it's an NFL locker room, but he brings a toughness. He brings a mindset that is really, for me, it starts to envelop your whole locker room and team. The way he practices, the way he trains, the way he goes about it every single day, the guys around him, he influences. And that's a big thing when it comes to getting drafted in the NFL at such a high level.
Well, I've said it many times, with my team picking fifth, he would be great because you solidify the interior of your offensive line. A part of me says you just don't take offensive guards in top five spots in the draft. You know, Denver, I mean, do they need a quarterback? I don't know. Is Case Keenum a guy that can play for 4 or 5 years? I wished I knew that answer. That would probably give us a better idea of what they're going to do. They're one of the big question marks in the top five. But whoever takes him, they've got a guy that's going to play for the next 12 years and be an All-Pro. I mean, he's as much of a lock to me as anybody in this draft. The quarterbacks, I think it's one of the great mysteries in a long time. This quarterback group, I have no idea how they're going to turn out. There's a lot of questions. There's a flaw in all these guys. Saquon Barkley is a running back. Running backs have been de-emphasized a little bit in the draft. Is he going to be that next big thing in the NFL? There's a pretty good chance of that, but there's a pretty good chance. But Quentin Nelson, to me, absolute lock.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to ask yourself, and it's a legitimate point, that he is a guard. Is a guard worth taking in the first 5, 10, however many picks? At least top 10, I think, in the draft. But everyone's talking about this guy as a lock to be one of the greats right off the bat, which puts some pressure on him right off the bat. But at the same time, now Zach Martin is a little bit different because he was a tackle. So at least when he was drafted, you could say you're drafting a tackle. But he's been a guard. So if you redid the draft right now, would you draft Zach Martin as a guard in the top 5 picks? If it was Zach Martin next week as opposed to Quentin Nelson?
If that was a major need and you did not need a quarterback, it's hard to go against
right.
that thought.
And that's what I think when you talk about, as you weigh, is a guard worth drafting that high? I think part of what you have to base it on is, what is your offense? What are the intentions for your offense? Do you plan on being a heavy running team, or are you just going to sling it around quite a bit? Like if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, for example, I absolutely think he would be worth it. I think there are a lot of other teams as well. Denver, as you mentioned, is one of the teams that are talking about him. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are another. But if you're planning on being at least somewhere around 50-50 or 60-40 run game versus pass game, then I absolutely think that you would take a guy like Quentin Nelson, a dominant guard, that high in the draft.
And then there's Harry Hiestand, his old coach, the offensive line coach for the team picking 8th. The Chicago Bears, that would be very, very interesting. You've got an offensive-minded head coach now. You probably got your running back. You think you have your quarterback. Wide receiving core, they've added some parts during free agency. So maybe the final piece, at least for now, in this restructure of the offense is a guy like Quentin Nelson. Just saying, could be possible.
Yeah.
Could be possible.
Absolutely.
But I would not be shocked if he's gone by 8. I really wouldn't.
Yeah,
more on that next week. Yeah, go ahead.
Beyond the quarterbacks, Barkley and Chubb, the defensive end, Barkley the running back, Chubb the defensive end, Nelson the guard are the three guys that everyone's talking about. And I can't see any of them getting past the top 10. And as you said, maybe even the top 8.
And again, we'll have plenty of NFL draft talk next week. We'll focus on the Notre Dame players, and we're going to try to do a mock draft on Monday. So we'll have some fun with that next week as we get set for the draft, where 2 Irish could go in the first round. 2 could go in the top 15. Very, very possible.
Right.
Now let's focus on Jeff Quinn, the Irish offensive line coach. He was asked how he's different from the old offensive line coach, Harry Hiestand.
Well, it's not so much I'm thinking about what's different. We want to continue the tradition here at Notre Dame. And to be able to do that, you come in prepared each and every single moment to deliver your very best when your very best is needed. And one of the things that Coach Hiestand and both myself have done is to continuously challenge each and every one of these young men to be able to go out there and perform at their very best and staying locked in. And competing and having great success, and they've been able to respond. So, we're taking that that process and moving it forward. From my standpoint, it's still about encouraging and challenging the competitive greatness every single moment, being organized, being detailed, continuously communicating with them in terms of what I see and what I feel they need to do to improve, or to give them a little bit of, hey, that was a heck of a doggone rep. That's a great play, and that's the difference, maybe from that standpoint. But I think overall, I feel good about where we're at and where we're heading with this group and how they're responding. And when you turn on the film, we see great effort. And that's what we've seen with the 6 years with Coach Hiestand coaching this position, and we're seeing that in a very, obviously 13 practices We have an awful lot to prove, and I do too, and certainly I'm excited about that challenge.
Did he take a breath there? That was a heck of a speech, man. I'm fired up.
That's a good point.
That's where Jeff and Harry are a little different.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's probably the biggest difference is the way they answer questions. That's right. And here is Coach Quinn when asked why he's used so many offensive line combinations this spring.
Spending time with Coach Kelly and Coach Long well before we started spring ball. They sat me down and we all, you know, conversed and said, hey, how many guys can you get ready to play? I said, well, I'm going to try to get all of them ready to play. You know, if you have a lot of good players, develop them all and get them out there and play. But also on top of that was who can play where, as opposed to finding the top five guys. I think I have a pretty good idea who those guys are, but also to know that there's more than five. And I think we learned last year by playing and starting six guys on the offensive line strengthened this unit, and it has strengthened our ability to work through this process this spring. But I feel we have more than five guys that are going to go out there and help us compete and play. And I wanted to see guys not only play tackle, but to see them play guard and potentially help us at center.
I mean, it's interesting to look back at last year. We had no idea Hainsey was going to play as a true freshman.
Yeah.
And he and Kramer did a nice job at right tackle, and it was good for last year's team, and it really benefits this year's team because Hainsey has broken in at the right tackle position, and it sure seems like it's been a pretty nice transition for Kramer inside as that physical run blocker. So during a great football season with a great offensive line, they actually kind of set themselves up for the new look offensive line by what they did last year. So it really worked out for this year and also, of course, last year as well.
Yeah, you got some versatility. You got guys with experience, and you slide in just a little bit similar with Kramer. The body type is close to what Quentin Nelson is, and Nelson, of course, was a tackle in high school and just so big and physical. He moved inside, and that seems like along the same lines a good match for Kramer. And then you've got Eichenberg, who we kept kind of thinking maybe was going to be one of the guys last year. It didn't happen. He ended up backing up McGlinchey on the left side, and now he's going to take over that spot this year.
Sean and Darren with you. Let's hear more comments from Irish offensive line coach Jeff Quinn. What is he looking for in Saturday's Blue Goal game?
You know, I always talk about EAT, E-A-T, you know, tremendous effort. Every single guy playing as hard as they can, as long as they can, to the echo, to whistle. I want to see that, you know, without a doubt. And I've been able to see that. I want to see that for four quarters. I think assignment-wise, the A in that is just making sure that we are locked in and that there are no missed assignments, no mental errors. You know, that's a critical part, that we're operating appropriately when calls are made, play calls are made, that we are making the proper assignment calls, and then we go and attack from that standpoint. And just being real sound fundamentally with our eyes being locked in and making sure we understand our aiming points and how defenders are moving and how to hit those moving parts, our footwork. Making sure that we have great balance and center of gravity, and then getting our hands nice and tight and low and inside, you know, and making sure if we get all those things accomplished after the end of the game and stay healthy on both sides of the ball, and then we had a successful afternoon.
That was like the Cliff Note version of how to be a great offensive lineman.
Pretty much.
He covered That's everything it. Right there. I'm not sure we could add anything, but hey, the passing game, they're trying to make it better during these spring practices leading up to the Blue Goal game. But don't be surprised if the running game is front and center quite a bit in this game. Of course, the second half, it always is. They just want to get out of Dodge without any injuries. But I wouldn't be shocked if there's quite a bit of the running game shown in the first half, because it really isn't something. It's not they've left it behind, but there's just been a little more emphasis. They had to get the passing game to grow.
Exactly.
Here is Quinn on the confidence that center Sam Mustafa brings to this Fighting Irish offensive line.
There's a lot of confidence, you know, when Sam's in there, you know, and he's able to direct calls and make adjustments based on what defenses are doing, and they all trust Sam without a doubt, as I do, and certainly his experience is, it's pretty evident when we flip on the film. You know, he's always on his A game with the calls and the various different techniques that are applied based on the situations that present themselves. He hits those marks all the time, you know, so it's just great to have somebody who's has that kind of experience. You know, the last time I had a really solid center from that standpoint was Jason Kelce. You know, somebody who was just, he hit all the calls correctly. He knew how to change things if we needed to. He knew how to adjust things. He knew how to keep everybody relaxed and confident and focused throughout the duration of each and every drive and throughout a game. And I think that's what Sam continues to develop into, is just not only a great center, but a great leader and a great leader of the five men up front.
Coach Quinn doing a little name dropping there. Kelce,
yeah, that's
the
right.
Offensive lineman for the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, had a great run in the postseason. And I know we gave a lot of credit to Mustafa on this program last year. I mean, he was rock solid on a line with two first-round picks. He kind of got lost in the shuffle, I think, a lot of times. We tried to highlight him. But I almost feel like there's still a part of the Irish fan base that remembers maybe two snaps from 2 years ago that's defined him. Mm-hmm. But he was outstanding last year. Forget about what happened 2 years ago. He dealt with a lot of scrutiny and criticism, handled it beautifully, and came out and played a wonderful season last year. And now you look at him as a position you don't even worry about on this football team.
And whether it's Mustafa or whether it was Nelson, McGlinchey, any of those guys, all that stuff from 2 years ago, as soon as you said that, it's like you think about it, all that stuff went away last year, and now he's the veteran of this line and a guy who's now going into his third year as a starter out there, and that's got to be invaluable. And, I mean, to hear you talk about Jeff Quinn name-dropping, but just for him to say that to mention a guy like Jason Kelce, who's become one of the top centers in the NFL, and for that to be the comparison point, that's pretty good. And you know, the NFL draft starts a week from tomorrow, and you start thinking about next year where Mustafa might go. Centers don't go too high either, but I've got a feeling that he's going to be, as far as centers go, in pretty hot demand next year too.
I think you're right. Sean and Darren with you. More Notre Dame football spring talk tomorrow. Then the Blue Gold game Saturday at 12:30. The play-by-play here on WSBT Radio. We've got Rapid Fire next. It is 6:26 at WSBT. And SportsBe continues at 6:32. Darren Pritchett in Dayton. Sean Steyer's back at our WSBT studios. We've got Cubs baseball in about 10 minutes right now. Rapid Fire.
Let's start with a Notre Dame football question, Darren. Of course, Notre Dame and Alabama announced today that they're going to play a home-and-home series in 2028 and 29. So my question to you is this. How many times will those two teams play before that home football series begins in 2028? Once, twice, more than twice, or none?
Wow. So we're basing this on kids that might be in third grade right now. I haven't got my evaluation reports on them as of yet. Well, I guess we have to look at it this way. This century, they've met one time. That was in the national championship game.
Right.
So that's one time in 18 years. And we're talking the next 10 years. So I guess you got to play the percentages, and the most you could say is one using that criteria. But I'm going to say zero. I say that the first time they will meet is 2028.
Yeah, and you make a good point, because I think it had been since 1987 the last time they played before that BCS championship game. And they had actually played six times in a 14-year span leading up to that last one in 87. But I'm going to say once. I think that especially as much as Alabama's in the college football playoff, I think Notre Dame will make it at some point before 10 years from now. So that gives them pretty high odds that they'll play at least once. So I'm going to go with one time between now and 2028.
And they could meet in a bowl game. There are some SEC matchups.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's true, too. Okay, during the ACC football coaches teleconference today, Brian Kelly was asked if he sees any benefit to ever holding the Blue-Gold Spring game at an off-campus site. And here is what the Irish head coach said.
Well, I think for us, it would be where do we go? I mean, we'd be, if we're going to do it, you'd want to go to a warm weather climate. And so then it just depends on, you know, where do you go to do that? We all know about a couple years ago, Michigan going to IMG, going to Europe. It's certainly, you know, I look at spring ball as you don't have a ton of time and contact hours with your team. So if you can create an opportunity off campus, I think it makes sense. But the logistics are hard and it's expensive. And I know, you know, well, you're talking about expenses at Notre Dame, but the reality of is it worth the expense of shipping your players off campus? And you generally have to take up some of their free time to do it. So I don't see how the net benefit is doing it off campus. I think it's a great instructional and teaching time, and I think that's kind of where I'll stick with it.
So after hearing that, Darren, do you think there's any reason the Irish should ever consider playing the spring game off campus?
I really don't. I don't see the overall benefit. You have the Shamrock Series game to take your product to a market that maybe doesn't normally get Notre Dame football, so that's a huge bonus for the program.
Yep, true.
I agree with Brian. It is a development time. It's a time to try things. It's not to jump on a plane and go somewhere and spend, you know, a couple of days there, another time away from school. So I don't see the benefit unless the broadcast team gets first-rate accommodations and gets to go as well. Then I might change my mind. Otherwise, I don't see the benefit.
There you go. I mean, really, because when you think about it, Michigan, they went to IMG and they went to the Vatican. And really, they did it just so people would talk about it, it seems like. I don't know that it served any bigger benefit than that for Michigan. It was kind of a stunt. Jim Harbaugh was good at kind of getting some publicity to his team. But, I mean, if Notre Dame was going to do it, the Vatican would be the natural place, but you're not going to play second fiddle to Michigan at this point because they've already done it. And it just doesn't seem to make any sense. And it's a good point about the Shamrock Series game. You're already kind of barnstorming a little bit with that one. There's really no sense doing it with the spring game. It's about practice, getting the work in. So I don't see any benefit to it either.
Well, last time I checked, it really hasn't helped Michigan. They still can't beat their rivals.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. Okay, both ESPN and the NFL Network having two, this is a fill in the blank, both ESPN and the NFL Network having two-hour NFL schedule release shows tonight is blank.
I think it's fun for fans. People love the schedule. Players talk about the schedule. We know who everybody's going to play. You see the schedule laid out. So I think it's fun for fans. The only thing is everything gets leaked. I already know who my team plays on opening day if the reports are right, and they normally are. So I don't know if there's a lot of drama about game one. But for a fan, I think it's kind of the start of a new season. When you get the schedule, then you got the draft next week. It kind of kicks off the 2018 NFL season.
Yeah, maybe I'm being a fuddy-duddy. I don't know. But to me, it's just like, you know, you can do the NCAA selection show. You could probably get it done in 30 minutes, but they draw it out longer than that. And to me, this is just like it's a two-hour show. To release schedules seems a little bit much. To me, it seems more like a social media post than it does a two-hour show. But at the same time, everyone's getting geared up for the draft next week, and obviously you want to find out who your teams are going to play and all that. I doubt I'm going to watch very much. Once they're posted online, I'll go find out and look at it. And, of course, we'll talk about the Colts and Bears schedules on the Leprechaun Lunch tomorrow, maybe tomorrow night on Sports Beat 2. But other than that, it's like, you know, 2 hours, I don't know.
Well, I think the problem is they want to give equal time to most teams, so it takes a little while to go through all those schedules.
That's true, too. There are
30. And who knows, maybe Tom Brady's not going to play this year, so that could change everything. He hasn't told the Patriots, according to reports, he's going to play this year. So I don't know if he normally has to do that, but apparently that's a story. We'll see.
You haven't told me you're going to be here tomorrow. Are you going to be here tomorrow?
I will be at Four Winds Field.
Okay, well, see, but you'll be on the show. You haven't told me that. but I know that you'll be here.
That's right. I got you. I'm with you. I promise I will be here, and I will make sure I'm ready on Monday as well.
Right. All right. Is that it?
We can do one more.
All right. I've got a short one anyway. So
yeah.
I'm curious to get your perspective as our resident hockey guy. Do you think it's good or bad that the expansion Las Vegas Knights swept the LA Kings in their first round playoff series in their first year of existence? Good or bad for hockey?
This is for Ken from Pensacola, inside story.
Okay.
From the insider chat. You know, that's an interesting thought. I mean, we have never seen anything like this, because in 1969, I want to say, that's when the NHL expanded from the original six, and they put all the expansion teams in one division. So somebody had to go to the Stanley Cup final. It was the Blues.
Good point.
For a couple of years. So outside of that, I mean, we have never seen a team go from nothing, basically picking a bunch of misfits from other teams that they didn't want, putting them together and having unbelievable success. I mean, I thought they would fade as the season went on, but they just kept getting better. They made some trades at the deadline, got Tatar from Detroit trying to make themselves better, and then they go sweep the Kings. I think it's a great story. Anytime you have kind of a Cinderella story, it's good for that particular sport. And I still think, even though they've been great all year, the fact that they did not exist at this time last year, I think it's a great story for hockey.
Yeah, it's amazing that they not just won the series, but they swept it in four games as well. So I think it's good to bring some publicity and kind of get some extra spotlight on them. Wasn't it the Jacksonville Jaguars in their second year when Tom Coughlin was there? Didn't they get to the AFC Championship game in their second year of existence?
Yeah, they beat the number one seed Broncos in that wild game at Mile.
That's right. Yep. That's right.
Yep, I remember that.
Sore spot.
Next year they got revenge, but yeah, that was a stunning loss. Yep. Natron Means ran them over that day, and Mark Brunell at quarterback.
That's right. Yep.
Gah. Anyway, now, good for them. And you know what? They never would put teams in Vegas because they were afraid of scandals with the gambling. And here you get a team, and what do you know? They might win the Stanley Cup. They're co-favorites right now, according to some of the odds.
Well, that's what's amazing to me. Yeah, them and Nashville are the co-favorites, I guess. Which, it's like you win your first series, and all of a sudden you're the co-favorite to win the whole thing. That's even more amazing, I think.
The favorites are in Nevada and Tennessee, and Canada hasn't had a Stanley Cup winner since 92 or 93. I mean, what in the world is going on right now? Crazy. Hey, grab your clubs and get some spring savings with Blackthorn Golf Club's Blackthorn card. Right now it's available for only $99, which gets you 80% off the regular rate to play Blackthorn, including cart every round, every day, all season long. As a Blackthorn card member, Mondays and Tuesdays, you pay just $29 for green fees, including cart. Call 574-232-GOLF or visit blackthorngolf.com today. Sportsbeat also brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We are also brought to you by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Know your numbers. Visit goshenheartandvascular.org. Lavitt Insurance, the agency that rocks. See why at lavittinsurance.com. We thank you for joining us, Sean. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
It's official now. I know I will talk to you tomorrow.
That's a plan. I'll be here.
Right.
You'll be there.
Sounds
All right, good. South Bend Cubs baseball next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.